It's 5 o'clock in Pirate Country, and it's time to get pumped up with the P-Man. Hit the door and hit the road. 94.3 The Game is going to get you home, and the P-Man's not holding back.
Yes! Yes! Pirates win! Pirates win!
Bring on the Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
Holy mackerel! Oh!
The flagship station of the ECU Pirates.
All righty, Monday, and it is the final episode of Inside Pirate Athletics coming your way at the top of the hour. I'm the great P-Man, Patrick Johnson, with you here. Thank you for being with us today on 94.3 The Game, flagship of the ECU Pirates, 94.3thegame.com, streaming there, and also at the IBX Media app, free for Google Play and download. We have Steve and Igo and myself at Tiebreakers tonight, the original Bell's Fork location, from 6 until 7 here on 94.3 The Game, up and down stations on the ECU Sports Network, 94.3thegame.com, and the IBX Media app, plus WNCT.com. So we'll see. We'll have a big addition for you of that program coming up at the top of the hour. Philip, the ref Pilkington, is producing. And Philip, a tradition unlike any other. The Monday after the Masters. I was thinking this weekend, I would love to be exceedingly wealthy. Like, have don't care money. You know what I mean? You just whatever. And I would love to go to Augusta for the weekend and then matriculate over to Myrtle Beach that Monday, because they always have a big Hootie and the Blowfish concert, and I'm not interested in Hootie. Hootie doesn't like me. But I think it would just be cool to kind of take that whole scene in, man. It's just me.
I agree. I would want to go to the Masters, but I would be on my way right after to Boston to watch the Sox play the 11-10 baseball game that they played this morning and catch a little bit of the Boston Marathon. So it's something I've been able to attend three times in my life. It's a really cool event there in Boston. So that's what I'd be doing, but I definitely agree with the Masters thing.
It is the marathon. It was on this day many years ago. We had, well, not on this date, but on this day.
No, it was this date. It was the 15th. Referring to 2013, yeah, it was the 15th. Yeah. Because it was Jackie Robinson Day. That's how I remember that it was that exact day.
And I interviewed Iron Mike Tyson that day as it was happening. I was interviewing Mike Tyson for a big segment that we did. Yeah. It was, I'll never forget it.
Yeah, you were interviewing a celebrity, which is, you were in a cooler place. I was at a more memorable spot as I was at the Westin in Boston about 300 yards from the finish line when that happened.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Now wait a minute. Let's unpack that a little. What do you remember of that? That had to be harrowing for you.
Yeah, so my mom finished the race. My dad and I had actually been standing across the street from the Forum restaurant, which is where the second one went off, all day. And we finished. We went up to the hotel room. She was about to get in the shower. We heard, if any of you, and North Carolinians will get this, people in Boston probably wouldn't get it. If you've ever heard a tree get struck in your backyard or in your neighbor's backyard, that thunder, that's what it sounded like. And we looked down and we saw the smoke. And you know, there's a lot of TV stuff going on down there, a lot of generators. And I'm like, man, a generator just blew up. My dad goes, nah, that's a terrorist attack. And right as I said, you're crazy, we saw the second one go off. And could see the people running. So that was a pretty crazy day.
God knows. I didn't know that about you. Man, what a story that. I knew your mom had run in the marathon previously, but and if you've told me that, I forgot about it. Boy, that's a crazy thing, isn't it? Wow. Pirates on the diamond, 4 out of 5. I know yesterday was a frustrating way to lose that game. Look, still a heck of a week. They're coming off one of those 11-game stretches where they won 10 of them. And, you know, they've won 11 out of 13 if you add the two games in this most current. So, I mean, we got Cliff Godwin coming up. We'll talk all about it. But, you know, they're doing this without Jacob Starling, who's a key part of what they do offensively and defensively. Some young guys have stepped up to the plate. I mean, Treya Savage is awesome. Root was able to earn the victory despite maybe not being his sharpest. And I just think a lot of the positives outweigh the negatives. We'll hear more from Coach Godwin coming up here with Igo and myself in a little bit. And then the spring game. Pilk, I think we've got a quarterback. I don't know which one, but we've got a quarterback, it would appear, in Greenville. And then there was a considerably different pace with the offense, was there not? It was fast moving. There were some explosion plays. I think a lot of people are going to be very, very enthusiastic about this. So let's bring in Joe Sampson. Trent McGee is also alongside. We'll talk to Joe right now about the spring game. And Joe, let's start with just, it was a gorgeous weekend. Such a beautiful weekend and a great crowd on hand. Probably one of the biggest crowds of the last several years. All excited about Pirate football. So I thought that helped foster a really enthusiastic atmosphere on Saturday.
It's huge atmosphere. I've played in a few spring games. I have never in my entire time as a Pirate seen a crowd like that. I mean, it felt like you were kicking off in September in Doughty, and you're missing probably about 30,000 more people for it to be a true kickoff experience, but there are huge plays happening. There's an interception happening, and it's not deafening, but you can hear it all the way up in the press box. The crowd's into it, the atmosphere around it, people were ready for it, which is such a shock to me, and I'm glad that Eastern North Carolina has such a passion for it, coming off what was one of the worst seasons in program history, and here we are showing up like it's opening day.
I love the fact that Joe said, I've played in a few big kickoffs in the spring.
You have to know your limitations, P-Man. They can fact check everything.
Let me ask you a little bit about, so 2-10 season a year ago for East Carolina. Mm. Their quarterback's no longer with the program, and you have two that have transferred in that were pretty heralded recruits out of high school. Caton Hauser, the Michigan State transfer, Jake Garcia, the multi-time transfer, Miami, Missouri. He bounced around a lot of high schools. COVID was factored into that, and he was just trying to play somewhere. I think this new generation's kind of used to bumping around and moving around and changing schools most people change socks. So let's start with the quarterback play. Assess it for us, both guys. I know the third string guy, Jeter, or the projected third string guy, Jeter, threw a pick six, but the two guys that are vying for that starting job seem to be pretty sharp.
Yeah, all three quarterbacks that saw significant snaps threw an interception. But I have to say, between Garcia and Hauser, both their interceptions were on the receiver. You're trying to put a ball in a tight window. That receiver's got to come down and get the ball and attack it. And in a couple of those situations, the corner just played on his back hip and took it out. But the quarterback play is extremely improved from what we saw last season, and that's no knock to Dr. Flynn, who is studying right now for his MCAT to go to medical school because he's the smartest guy I know.
Oh, wow.
But The thing that stood out to me was their composure and how they stood in on things. Halfway through the spring game, both of the quarterbacks switched. So one went to the purple team, one went to the gold team and swapped and went with a whole different set of receivers midway, which is not something you'd normally see in their composure. They didn't get flustered. The timing was still crisp. It really stood out to me just the way they were handling themselves on the sideline. When Purple went down, Hauser had them up on the sideline like, we're going to go get three here. We're going to go get a drive. And that's really what stands out for that franchise guy you want at quarterback to stand in the huddle and get the eyes. Another thing that stood out to me was their communication. When you get to the line, a lot of times it can get muddied up and you see different looks and you're trying to tell a receiver to come in and you can't really communicate that in certain scenarios, which is why the crowd's such a great thing to practice with, because it's going to get loud and dowdy even as the home team. You don't have them trained like Peyton Manning used to, where you could hear a pin drop in Colt Stadium. So it'll be very interesting to see how that plays out moving forward. But Hauser and Garcia both just felt very comfortable in the offense. Didn't look like any of them were straining to try and force something, if that makes sense. JDB did a great job at getting them into leverage situations and knowing where the numbers were in the matchup.
Joe, 554 yards of total offense in the spring game on Saturday, and you mentioned the play of Hauser and Garcia. What stood out to you about the way the offense looked under new OC John David Baker?
It's fast. Fast, 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 fast. I don't know how many times I could say it. I am so serious when I say this. I look down for maybe 3 seconds in between a play to send out a tweet or answer something back on somebody asking a question, and we were 34 yards down the field. There was one play from Caden Hauser that stood out. He's standing at the minus 32 from where they were. He threw the ball about 62 yards to one of the receivers who takes it inside of the 20, and then they scored from there. And you just kind of look up and went, wait a minute, what happened? So there's a lot of speed to that offense. Every 10 seconds is not an exaggeration for John David Baker's offense. It truly feels like every single second you're blinking, they're running a play. And I think defenses are going to have huge trouble with that coming into the season.
You know, I saw John David Baker on Friday. I'm sorry, PJ. And he,
no, go ahead.
He said, you know, I asked him how the spring had gone. He said, really good, really good. And, you know, coaches say that you know, just to say it, and to, you know, some because they don't want to talk to you, too, yeah, because they just want to, yeah, you know, they're ready to move on to something else. But, you know, it sounded like from him in the conversation I had with him that he really felt good about the way the offense had progressed and learned his style in the spring. Did you think the offense as a whole gelled pretty well in this up-tempo spread offense?
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest takeaway was the O-line. You get protected so quickly when the ball comes out that fast. You're not straining for as long. There's no true five-step drop for the quarterback, so you're feeling like you have to hold up in protection. And it showed the confidence between the tackles to know that they just had to kind of hold for maybe a second, maybe two, for the ball to get out, even on the long balls. You can tell that the offense is extremely comfortable with the speed right now. It's only been 2 months, but this looks like what should have been where you were. It looks like the greatest show on field as opposed to turf. Shout out to Ricky Prohl and the Rams. But that's kind of the thing that you're expecting from an offense like this, is the ball to come out so quickly, which is why it was so surprising. Also, the O-line had a great day in the run game. 153 yards on the ground and a couple big pops from Camaro and from Marlon Gunn, which is nice to see, especially considering where the absence of the run game was last year. Well, I don't want to say towards the end of spring, but with all the injuries and nursing things, it's great to see them start to run the ball.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the running game and the offensive line. So let's, as we talk to Joe Sampson here from 94.3 The Game, talk about the receiving core. A couple guys who seem like they can stretch the field. You also have the FSU transfer, the uber-talented Winston Wright. Looked really good. I think dropped a ball, but still looked fairly good by all accounts. Receivers, give us a little bit on that.
Keelan Robinson looked great, which is something you need to have two dominant outside receivers, especially with the season Chase had last year. He looked great as well, but you know, when you're the big dog, they kind of shift that coverage to you when they go a lot of too high, like our defense did on Saturday for the spring game. They shade you. They shadow you. They want to make sure you're not making that big play. And Blake Harrell lived up to his promise on that one. He told Chase in pregame, you could hear it all the way up in the stands, you're not scoring one on me today. And Chase didn't, because that's just kind of the thing you want to do in spring, is force your star players to be frustrated. And I know that's odd to say, but spring is not about who's going to be prepared for September in the spring. It's about forcing people to work through adversity and strain and frustrations, bringing a blitz the quarterback's never seen before, trying to give them looks that they're never going to get, so that when you get to that point of September, you're extremely prepared for that opener. And it's another thing to go through spring ball in an offense you already know and get the crazy stuff. It's an even bigger one to go through a whole new offense with a whole new coaching staff and to look as sharp as they did.
Joe Sampson talking with Trent McGee and myself here, ECU spring game over the weekend. The pick six off Jeter, a couple other interceptions. Isaiah Brown Murray, IBM, had one. Tymir Brown also had one. I think it was the kid McKinley who got the 30-yarder off of Jeter. So how did that group, because that's one of the strengths, is what's going on in the secondary for the Pirates, which usually it's a question mark coming in, it seems like, traditionally. But this is an area of strength, it would appear, on the defensive side.
Yeah, it seems like ever since J-Mac, who went on and is now still playing for the Broncos, that DB room has been uber talented. And it's no surprise now when you go and get a guy like Lamp, who, might I add, is all of 6'3". I mean, I'm a tall guy myself, P-Man, you know me, and I'm looking at this guy eye level. And for him to be a corner like that, the only one that I've ever stood eye to eye with was Sauce Gardner. So that just shows you the length, the height, and the athleticism he's going to have to play on the outside in that field role. And then you've got Savone Revel, who was a first-team all-conference player, could have been an All-American, should have been an All-American. But that's going to be a very big thing for them. With IBM also now coming into his own, you've got three guys you can rotate. You can stay fresh, especially when you get into these high-powered offenses like we're going to face towards what's the new American Conference with that UTSA offense that we saw, with the App State offense you're going to see from last year again. It's going to be very nice to see how those DBs like to mesh with. And now with another new coach at DB, it's going to be a huge thing, especially with what was Lynch and then it was Ellis. And now with Mont, Mont's going to be another big thing for you to do these things with. And he's got a great pedigree of coaching, and you can see these guys are starting to buy in.
Joe, it feels like it's a kind of a new start in a sense. I think everybody in the spring is always upbeat. Coaches are in good moods. As I alluded to earlier, everyone's going to say that the offense and defense looks good, even if they don't. But it does, you know, going back to last season, which we all want to forget about, it just feels, everything feels like it's just a fresh start. Do you kind of get that sense with Coach Houston? I know he talked about how great the crowd was Saturday, the best he's had since he's been here now in year six. And it just feels, something feels different. Am I wrong about that, or do you feel it too?
No, it's an anticipation like he just got hired yesterday, which I think is, it speaks to the culture he has. It speaks to the fan buy-in. You're in your sixth year, and we're out there kicking off like it's a brand new team that we've never seen before. We've never like understood what this coaching staff's going to be about, and that's the offense. Yes, the defense had some turnover. Some great guys went on to get some new jobs. But the system is still the same, yet it feels so fresh and so new with some new faces and some additives to the pot almost. The offense brings that kind of pedigree with it because it's so fast, because the defense has been so dominant for so long. Now they get a fresh look at things. How are they going to respond to tempo when they get into these late games and UTSA is trying to do the same thing and all of a sudden, we've been doing that in practice since August. This is nothing for us. Or how is this high-powered offense going to train them to handle the speed at which Navy and Army are going to play in the wing T because of that B-back running around in that motion set? It's all going to relate. And the biggest thing about the spring is not about who is getting on the bus. It's about keeping who's supposed to be on the bus on the bus. And when I say that, you're not trying to figure out who your starters are going to be in September. And I said this before as well. You're trying to figure out who's going to be the guy you can go to in August to make sure you have the right set of people in camp. A lot of things are learned about players in spring as opposed to shown. It's about strain, it's about wants, about know-how, and it's about being a servant leader, especially on the special teams like that. I know we didn't see it in the spring game, but that's a huge emphasis all spring is special teams. And when you have a defense as fired up as they do and the fresh start with the new special teams coordinator with how that's played out in the past, you can also see there's a passion for that to be great as well.
All right, thanks to Joe Sampson. Great stuff. Appreciate it, Joe. And thanks to Trent McGee for his help on that one as well. Let's take a timeout. And when we come back, we're going to hear from Cliff Godwin, head coach of the Baseball Pirates, top 10 ranked ECU. And they claimed another series in the American this weekend, another no-hitter as well. We'll discuss the whole thing with Coach Godwin. And Steven Igo from Hoist the Colors will join us. Welcome in. We are talking Pirate baseball with ECU head coach Cliff Godwin. He joined Steven Igo from 247 Hoist the Colors and myself here as we talk ECU and sensational week, winning four out of the five games. Coach, thanks for the time as always, and congrats on what was a really good week.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I thought our guys did a really good job. Obviously, it's tough to navigate a five-game week. To throw two no-hitters and 10-run rule, two teams in those four wins, unbelievable. And really to be able to do it without one of your best players and Jacob Starling and one of your leaders. Also Aaron Groller being down. You know, Igo mentioned that off the air, but he's just dealing with some arm soreness. We're hoping that he'll be able to give us something this weekend coming up. We actually had two guys on the 30-man roster this weekend, and Starr and Groller, that we felt pretty confident they wouldn't be able to play, but just put them up there because the other guys were redshirting that haven't been in the game. So that was pretty interesting. But other than that, man, I thought our guys did a really good job.
The two no-hitters within a five-day, four-day span, to throw them and they'd be combined no-hitters too, that's pretty impressive stuff, because you know it's one thing if it's a single, it's one thing if it's maybe a guy within a span of a handful of days like the great Jake Jacobs did all those moons ago when Igo wasn't thought of and you and I, Cliff, were youngins. That's pretty cool stuff. But to have that happen and be combined in all of those instances, I mean, that just speaks to how great the staff can be when it's on.
Yeah, I mean, Coach Knight's done a great job developing these guys. But on Tuesday, Jaden Winter went out there and was good. And, of course, Chris Kaler and Parker Thomas. And then Friday, Trey and D'Lo. Just, you know, amazing that could be accomplished within 4 days, whatever it was. So those guys did a really good job.
I want to follow up really quick before I yield some time here to Mr. Igo about Parker Thomas. Tell us and tell the audience a little bit about this young man.
Yeah, he came in as a two-way player. Actually played for Coach Palumbo's brother in high school up in Maryland. In the fall, he felt like it was, you know, kind of too much, which I kind of agreed with him, just trying to – he was a switch hitter, infielder. And he still takes some ground balls just in case of a necessity, especially with Starling being down. Also, Chaz Myers was sick this weekend, so he wasn't able to even be at the facility. But just another option for him to take ground balls and stuff. But really kind of had lost his command a little bit, and then in the pitch reverse hitter started getting some of his command back. So we wanted to get him out there and get him an opportunity, and did a good job on Tuesday.
Coach, we talked about the emergence of some pitchers this week. Ethan Norby, for sure, definitely on Wednesday, and then he came back, started Sunday as well. Just what can you say about Ethan and his development and his ability to pitch well this week?
First off, I'm so proud of him because early in the season, he just wasn't himself. You know, pitched great in the fall, pitched good in the preseason, and then just mechanically got off a little bit. So Coach Knight found some stuff on video, worked with him, and Ethan, such a mature young man to be a freshman. Always make fun of Connor and just, you know, he had some growing pains for sure his freshman year. But Ethan, so on top of his academics, on whatever he needs to do to physically and mentally be prepared to pitch at this level. But when you're handed adversity as a freshman early in the season, sometimes they don't recover. And, man, he has just gone out there and been the guy we knew he could be at a high level, especially this past week. And yesterday, we knew that he was just going to start the game for us, and we were hoping two, maybe three innings at max and around that 40-pitch count mark. And, of course, he got there, and we brought Danny in, and the guy bloops the ball over the infielder's heads, which that's what I always tell our guys, never put yourself in a situation where a bloop or a bad call can go against you because it's out of your control. But he did great for us yesterday. And like I said in the post game, Ethan Norby, Trey Savage, Zach Root, every one of our pitchers on this staff, their future is way more important than us winning one game. So, and we need him to be fully healthy at the end of the year as well, too. So we weren't going to push him in that situation, but he's done a great job.
With Norby going forward, is it a situation where you kind of play it, I don't know, game to game as far as his role, or is he a guy you could slot in as a weekend guy going forward? Kind of what's your mindset there?
I think we're going to keep probably that Sunday TBA right now, just so we can navigate the weekend. If we have an opportunity to win a game and use Ethan out of the bullpen, I think we'll do that, and then we'll figure out Sunday when we get there. But I just think he's too valuable right now to just be slotted in that spot, especially last week with having five games. I don't think we could have done that. So just with the pitching depth and stuff. But, you know, maybe moving forward, I mean, there's never – hey, never say never about anything in this sport or in life in general. But I think this week will be TBA as well on Sunday.
We saw some guys, you know, clearly get opportunities this week, five games, and you mentioned Groller being down, and it presents a challenge, Cliff, but also a great learning opportunity for DeLorenzo. He closed out the no-hitter. You know, things didn't go his way Sunday, but what can a guy like D'Lo and others, you know, learn from yesterday or, you know, anybody that made an appearance this weekend for the first time or first time in a while?
Yeah, I think D'Lo for especially, I mean, I'm sure there's some fans out there that, you know, think it was his fault we lost the game, and that's not the case. I mean, we lost the game in multiple ways yesterday, but when I went to the mound to take him out, I said, hey, this was one outing. This isn't who you are. Yes, you can learn from it, but this can't define you or it'll derail your whole season. So he's a super competitive dude. Of course, he was hurting a lot after yesterday's game, but his future in our program is very bright, and he's a hard worker, and he'll be very diligent in his processes to get better with Coach Knight. But we're super proud of him and you know, where he'll be in the future in our program.
10th year ECU baseball coach Cliff Godwin joins Steve and I go myself here as we talk Pirate baseball, coming off a 4-1 week, couple of no hitters in there, run rules as we have noted. So it has been a heck of a week, and those 5-game weeks are really tough to get through, as we all know. Cliff, let me ask you a little bit about your two Friday, Saturday, your 1 and 1A starters and their performances. Obviously, part of the Friday no-hitter was Treya Savage, who just continues to be amazing. He should get back-to-back pitcher of the week honors in the AAC. It's crazy that that was the first one for him last week. You wouldn't think that was the case, but it just happened to be. What he's doing right now is pretty special. I know there were more than 36 scouts at the game when he went. So to be able to perform college baseball and perform like he has is one thing, but there's, you know, all these other outside factors that are, that could influence him. He's not letting it, and he's a stud, man. He's just straight ahead, and you got to love that.
Yeah, Trey is a stud. He's a stud pitcher, but he's a stud of a human being, and how focused he is every day on preparing his body for that start, physically and mentally, the hours he puts in. Of course, he's super competitive when he gets on that mound, but he's a pro. You know, scouts should take him as high as they could take him in the first round, because he's going to pitch in the major leagues for sure. Just, I know his talent, but also know what's in his heart and his soul and his mind and the way he goes about his business. And he's a great dude. So he deserves all the accolades he can get. And yeah, they don't like passing out awards to East Carolina. They want to make sure they pass them out to somebody else. But it's fine. But that's not what we're in it for anyway. And as Trey, you know, said in one of his articles, all he's worried about is trying to get the Pirates to play in the College World Series. So it's not selfish at all for Trey Savage. He just wants to go out there and help his team win.
You know, Zach Root has had some outings this year where he's kind of pitched around, pitched through, maybe more appropriately, not having his best stuff. That seemed like one of the, to a degree, the case with control. Maybe there's a little more to it. I'm sure you'll tell us if there were. But, you know, Zach gets a fifth victory and may not have been sharp as attack, but he's a different pitcher and a different player than he was a year ago, when he would have outings where maybe he didn't have all his best stuff.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest difference from this year to last year is last year, if he didn't have the best stuff, he gave up a few runs, and you probably had to take him out of the game earlier. But Saturday, I think he walked 4 or 5 guys, which is uncharacteristic of who he is this year. But he was still able to manage it and, you know, threw 5 innings, didn't give up any runs. I guess he gave up a run in the 6th. He didn't get an out, but Shinkman came in. But just that's what the great ones do when they don't have their best stuff. They're able to still go out there and help their team win. And that's been the thing I've been most impressed with Zach this year.
Coach Riley Johnson, spark plug all weekend, was key in the victories. Had a great catch that got pushed out on ESPN on the app for the web gym that it was. And again, he does it with the backdrop of this guy's really gutting his way through things. But I thought he was the real key to the weekend for you all, or one of them.
He played great. He played great, man. He's the heart and soul of our team. I mean, the guy's positionally, especially now what he goes through every day, to just get out there on the field and play for us. And pretty amazing. He never takes a BP on the field. He just hits in the cages a few swings and tracks off the pitching machines just to save his body as much as possible. And a lot of times he's tracking in the outfield and not even catching the ball, just because in the preseason when he was catching a ball, it's one of his shoulder actually dislocated. So it's just amazing. You know, he lays out, dives, steals bases, and with 2 shoulder braces on, and has rug burns underneath each armpit that are just there consistently because we play so much. Like I said, he's the heart and soul of our position player group.
Coach, you guys have gone 8 games now without Jacob Starling, 6-2, I believe, in those games. So first off, give us an update, if you will, on Jacob, and then, you know, kind of how your team has worked through that without one of their, you know, key players.
Man, you know, we were talking off the air, and if you'd probably said before the season started, hey, Star's going to miss 8 games and you're going to go 6-2, man, you'd be like, well, it must not have been during a tough stretch. Well, it was during a tough stretch. I mean, he didn't play at FAU. FAU hadn't lost a weekend series at home. We were able to get 2 out of 3 there. And then you have 2 midweek games, and then you have you and or Charlotte coming in town, and to be able to go 4-1 that week, amazing. I thought Colby Wallace played great this weekend. Dixon moving over to second base, which is where he played in high school, looked great, and Dixon swung the bat well. And really that's been the unique part of this team is we have a lot of depth, and we have a lot of guys that are, you know, not starting every single day that are good players. I know there's been stuff out on social media. Is Cam Klotz hurt? No, he's not hurt. He's working his tail off every day, and, you know, he had 2 at-bats yesterday. He is a great leader within our locker room. But to go 6-2 without Star and to go this week without Aaron Groller, I mean, he's obviously a guy that we have used in some crucial situations. And him being down, yeah, it definitely didn't help the situation, but it gave other guys opportunities, and guys stepped up, which is a good thing.
Any chance Star is back this week or still kind of day-to-day?
I highly unlikely tomorrow. We could all pray for Friday. I think that's a good prayer for everybody. If you believe in God, go ahead and pray for him, because I pray for his healing every single day. Not selfishly, just for him, because I know how bad he wants to be out there, and he is getting better. It's an oblique strain, so those things are really tricky with baseball players, obviously swinging a bat, but also running. I think running's going to be the last piece for him. He has taken some swings, probably at 40 to 50% off a tee and some front toss, so he is getting better.
And we talked a little bit about Colby Wallace's development last week, Clip, but I mean, he had another great week hitting the ball the other way, playing great defense, and just with Dixon moving over to second, I guess this will be more of a question when Star gets back, but how do you kind of handle, you know, maybe Colby and Starlin? I guess it's a good problem to have when that situation arises.
Yeah, Colby's done an unbelievable job, and, you know, the reason he's able to go out there, I mean, same kind of thing. It's Bristol's mentality, but different, but they're just baseball players, man. They go out there, they got to practice, they're coachable. They don't question a whole lot, which is not something you can't do, but it's just they just want to be great baseball players and great teammates, and that's why they're able to be out there as freshmen. I mean, you look out there on the field. Yesterday, you got 3 freshmen. You got a freshman on the mound. You got a freshman at third base. You got a freshman in left field. I don't think there's another team that's a top 10 team in the country that's got 3 freshmen out there. But when Star comes back, Star is going to play second base. So we will figure all the other stuff out. But Colby has done a really, really nice job for us to fill in when Star's been hurt.
And that diving pickup yesterday at third, I mean, that was a thing of beauty. He's
worked really hard on his defense with Coach Palumbo. And, you know, leaving the fall, I thought he needed some more work at third. And to his credit and Coach Palumbo's credit, they just worked their tails off. And, I mean, he's made some elite-level defensive plays at third base, not just as a freshman, as anybody that we've ever had over there. Of course, he's got a big league arm. So if he gets to it and he gets to his feet, man, he's going to be able to throw you out because of his arm.
Well, and you mentioned the fresh. I think the thing, and Dixon's a sophomore, of course, but I think with him, you know, that second base may be his more natural spot down in the future. But, I mean, that's a pretty still, though, he's been great at third. That's a pretty strong infield, you know, with that those key spots at the corner and then at second base with those two in the future. And then Bristol Carter, who had a 3-hit day, six hits on the weekend. And, again, his mentality is not like a freshman. He's built like a young Patrick Johnson, a stud, just a Greek god. I took it too far. I know, guys. But, boy, Carter, though, man, what a year he's having. And, I mean, it's got to be considered in the conversation for newcomer freshman of the year in the American, because he's doing awesome things that freshmen shouldn't be doing.
Well, it's just harder now for freshmen just because of the portal and just the game's older like other sports. I mean, you got guys out there, they're fifth and sixth year seniors. And, you know, J-Dub, I think, is 22 or 23. Bristol is a little bit older for his age, but, I mean, Kobe Wallace is 18. I mean, 5 years, that's a big difference in age. I don't care who you are. But for those guys to be able to go out there and do it at a high level is a credit to just their mentality and the way they were raised and the coaching they had even before they got here.
Coach, a couple questions that fans have kind of wanted me to ask you here over the last few weeks. Fan mail. No. One was about kind of just the status of recruiting, JUCO versus high school, and you know, obviously the portal factors into that, but kind of where are things now, you know, with the next year's class, and then, you know, at what point do you start looking at, you know, the guys that are sophomores and juniors? We kind of visit this every year, but, you know, fans want to know, so I just thought it'd be a good thing to ask you.
You know, this year's team's a little bit different because we're older. We've got a lot of guys that are seniors and guys that have the potential to be drafted. So there'll be more junior college guys in our class next year's class than we've had in a couple years, just because we needed some older guys to come in, especially to help us out on the mound. But, you know, I still believe in getting high school kids, developing them. Of course, you know, you might lose some that come to your program and leave because they want more playing time, whatever, but you still have to have the Joey Barinis and the Justin Wilcoxons of the world, in my opinion, that have grown up through our program, developed, didn't play a lot, but just work their tails off to become who they are. You know, I think about Cam Colmore, Matt Bridges, those guys, you know, who were fifth and sixth year seniors to be able to help us out in 21. But they were self-made dudes. Yeah, they were recruited by us, but they had to come here and work and develop underneath our coaching staff.
And then my buddy from down in Moorhead City, Chris, wanted me to ask you about scheduling. How far out with the non-conference are you scheduled right now? And then it seems like there is a symmetry now to your schedule of who you're going to play, when you're going to play them. That seems like a really good thing, because I think it fosters the rivalries, obviously, and gives you great tests in the midweek. But how far out are you with the schedule, and how far out do you know the LeClaire field, he was wondering?
Well, it's, you know, a lot of weekends are 3 and 4 years out that you're scheduling the weekends. And then the midweek stuff is probably a year or two out, you know, just, you know, some of the schools are the same, but, you know, sometimes we'll have a William & Mary or a VCU or whoever, just depending on how our midweek games shake out. So, but it's well in advance. I mean, I know they think probably we do it, you know, 6 months in advance, but scheduling is years in advance.
And Coach, as you look to William & Mary tomorrow, then the weekend series, what will be the things that will be the emphasis this week for the program?
Take it one pitch, one game at a time, like we did last week, and worry about ourselves and worry about, you know, making sure we're ready to play and getting better each day. Those are the things. You know, we've played really well recently. You know, we start out in the 11-game season, 7-4 in the first one. We were 9-2 in the second one. We were 10-1 in season three, and we're off to a 1-1 start in the fourth season. So our guys have done a really good job of being consistent over the course of time. So, but I thought we played some really good baseball last week.
Yeah, absolutely. Coach, thanks for the time as always. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
There goes our weekly interview with Coach Godwin, which can always be streamed at 9:30 or 10, depending on Coach Godwin's schedule each Monday, and they can be heard right here on the Patrick Johnson Show, as well as Hoist the Colors at noon. The P-Man is on his way over to Tiebreakers for the final 2023-2024 school year edition of Inside Pirate Athletics, which will feature Coach Godwin as well as Mike Houston. On the other side of this timeout, we will have our Sports Flash update, which we will follow up with our Pirate Report. Philip Pilkington here with your 94.3 The Game Sports Flash Update and Pirate Report. The Pirate baseball team went 4-1 last weekend, including a pair of no-hitters. Unfortunately, they could not finish off the weekend series sweep of Charlotte as they lost yesterday 8-7. Here was Coach Godwin's thoughts after the game.
It wasn't hard luck. We did it to ourselves. You know, the one thing that Coach Knight talked to our pitchers about is not giving them more than three freebies, and we had – I think, 6 freebies we gave them. And then we just weren't good enough offensively, especially early on. I mean, we put that one in together, and it's not Jackson DiLorenzo's fault. It's all of our fault. So we'll learn from it. We'll get better. We had a good week. It just wasn't a great week. We could have been 5-0 instead of 4-1.
The Pirates will be back in action tomorrow when they travel up to William and Mary. That game can be heard right here on 94.3 The Game. It'll be a 5:45 airtime right after the Patrick Johnson Show with a just after 6 o'clock first pitch. Elsewhere around the country this past weekend, Scottie Scheffler became the second youngest player to ever win 2 Masters. The 27-year-old brought home his second green jacket in 3 years after finishing 11 under for the tournament, 4 strokes clear of Sweden's Ludvig Åberg, and Scottie shot a 4 under for the final round. In NASCAR, Chase Elliott, NASCAR's most popular driver, snapped a 42 race winless streak with his win yesterday at Texas. That will get him into this year's playoffs. That'll do it for your 94.3 The Game Sports Flash Update and Pirate Report. On the other side of this timeout, we will talk more about the Pirate Spring Game, as we already heard from Joe Sampson earlier in the show, but we will hear some of Mike Houston's thoughts following that contest.
And now, the stunning conclusion of the show. It's the P-Man here on 94.3 The Game.
Welcome back into our Monday edition of the Patrick Johnson Show. P-Man on his way over to tiebreakers for the final edition of Inside Pirate Athletics here in the 2023-2024 school year. He will be joined by Steven Igo as well as Mike Houston to recap spring football practice, and Cliff Godwin to recap the week that was in Pirate Athletics, as the Pirates pulled out 4 out of 5 of their contest, including 2 of those in no-hit fashion, and preview the week that is ahead as they will be traveling to William & Mary tomorrow and will be back at home to take on Wichita State to try and avenge what was a tough series out in Wichita just 1 year ago. But right now, we are going to hear from Mike Houston and talk a little bit of Pirate football and get his thoughts on the spring game that was on today's Pirate Report.
And now, Patrick Johnson with today's Pirate Report on the flagship station of the ECU Pirates, 94.3 The Game.
Coach Houston, immediately following the spring game, was asked about his overall thoughts on the game as a whole and as of the atmosphere, which was very good out there on Saturday.
Just really excited, really pleased. I've been watching that on a daily basis from our offense. I'm excited that our fan base got to see it, and what a great day. I mean, this is the biggest crowd I think we've had in a spring game easily since I've been here. I don't know when the last time we had one like that. Beautiful weather, but just really appreciate our fan base and the Pirate Nation showing up to support our kids. They've had a great spring, and today was the perfect culmination to just a really successful spring.
Early in this one, the offense looked very good, including the game starting out on the first drive with a 26-yard pass from Jake Garcia to Brock Spaulding for a touchdown. And Coach Houston was asked about the early success from the offense in the spring game.
That's what I've been hoping for, and what I've been watching, and that's against a pretty good defense. Now, I mean, I think we're going to be pretty good defensively, and you know, for our offense to be able to execute like that really excites me.
It is against a solid defense with a handful of returners, but obviously when you're a coach, you want to see success on both sides of the football. You don't want to see one dominate the other, which I did not think that either side dominated in the 23-14 contest on Saturday. I'm glad that they split the teams up, though, to purple and gold instead of doing the offense and defense that they did a few years ago, because I remember the scoring being really wacky and no one quite understood how it worked, because obviously the defense can't only get points for scores, because then you'd only have defensive touchdowns, which there was one on Saturday, but they had some wacky scoring system for 3 and outs and tackles for loss, and the players didn't understand it, and then there was a wacky spot on the last play, and it turned out to be a tie, and everybody was ticked off because they thought they won. So the good news, I guess, is everybody got stakes that time, and half the team didn't get beanie weenies, unlike this time when there is a clear-cut winner and loser. But overall, I thought it was a good spring game, and a lot of the hype around it has to do with the fact that there are two new quarterbacks, and everyone is waiting to see who the starter is going to be. I think the great thing is that no one has really fallen off bad enough for the other guy to separate himself. Obviously, you want a clear-cut favorite going into the season, but it's clear that both these guys are here to compete for the starting job. Coach Houston was asked if that brought a little extra energy to the atmosphere around the spring game.
Not only a competition quarterback, but I think everybody can see both of them are very talented and they're very good players. And so, you know, we're blessed to have two guys on a roster like that.
Obviously, all the talk is around those quarterbacks and around the passing game. As we live in an era where passing the football is what wins football games, but you do have to have a balanced offense. And Coach Houston was asked by our very own Joseph Sampson after the spring game if he thought what he thought about the balance and about how the run game did overall on Saturday.
We want to be balanced in that respect. You know, we want to be able to do both. And I like the way Coach Baker has incorporated those two things together. You know, we came out throwing, but you know, at times when we wanted to and had the opportunity, we did a great job running the football. And obviously, you don't want to be one dimensional.
Overall to football, there are three parts of the game: offense, defense, and special teams. Coach Houston was asked about his thoughts on the special teams and kicker Andrew Conrad after the game.
Well, I thought he started off a little slow, but the last week's scrimmage and today, very, very sharp. And he has great rhythm. I think he and Luke are doing just a great job together as a unit, along with Alex as a snapper. So very pleased with him coming out of the spring. Very pleased with all of our specialists coming out of the spring.
Glad to hear that Coach has some confidence in the kicking game, because at the end of the day, there's going to be a couple games that are going to come down to a crucial kick. It happens every year. Look, there are good football teams and there are bad football teams. We know that. And the bad teams will be blown out in a majority of their football games, and the stellar teams, the Alabamas of the world, will blow teams out. But most teams fall in the solid to pretty good range. That's where the Pirates will probably fall this year. And when you fall in that spot, you have to be able to win close games. You see it every year. Teams only win 5 or 6 games, and it's because they're, you know, 1-4 in games decided by one possession. And then the teams that win, you know, 10, 11 games, they're 5-1 or 5-0 in games decided by just one possession. And a lot of times, you know, it's unfortunate that the kickers have to, you know, have that burden on them. Not that the other players don't. Defenses obviously have to come up with big-time stops. Quarterbacks and offenses have to come up with big-time drives. But so much of it is emphasized on the kicker in those late-game situations. So hopefully, if it comes down to it this year, Andrew Conrad can pull through. I do believe he can. Coach Houston seems very confident in his abilities when you heard him there. So that will about wrap up our Monday edition of the Patrick Johnson Show. Be sure to come back and join us tomorrow as we will meet with Bethany Bradshaw and talk about her new book on the Pirate baseball team. We want to thank you guys all for tuning in today. Thanks for Joe Sampson and Trent McGee, the P-Man, of course, Coach Godwin and Stephen Igo, who all contributed to our great hour of fun today. I'm Philip Pilkington. We appreciate you guys listening. Stay tuned for Inside Pirate Athletics as part of the ECU Sports Network. Final edition here this year. Coach Godwin and Coach Houston will be joining Stephen Igo and Patrick Johnson. Have a great rest of your evening, Pirate Nation.